Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And
I think I'm Anthony McCarthy.
I'm not hearing very much in my headphones, but see if we can get that right in a second. But we're going to have all manner of things we're going to talk about today.
It's going to be an exciting hour. A lot of very important issues we're going to talk about and get people's thoughts as they call in and share their thoughts on these important issues as well.
We'll go around the room and see what our guests think is important, from Gaza to whether it's the closing of Hostess to states falling apart, not being able to pay their bills, and more. And we are joined by Bob Summerby, Ann McCarthy, and Hassan Giordano. Stay with us. We'll be right back after we turn this over to WEA Traffic here in Baltimore. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And it's Monday.
Monday. Missed you last Monday.
You did. I missed you too.
A whole lot going on, but I'm glad to be in the studio.
You had the Black Legislative Caucus event last week in state, and you heard that was magnificent.
It was wonderful. Great event.
Hassan was there.
Hassan came through along with hundreds and hundreds of other folks. It was a great conference.
I'm going to read this underwriting, and then we'll go right into the conversation. I remind you, we're doing the state of the world in this first hour, the state of the nation, whatever, with our four guests, and kind of a and all of you at 410-319-8888. As you see, what's important to our guests, what's important to you, we'll find out. Next hour, get your recipes ready. We have a house full of chefs coming in to talk
some
about
the
their
best
recipes. Vegetarian, Caribbean, soul food, all the rest. See what he just did? Well, like this. So that comes up. Be ready for that.
That's right.
And on the way there, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's not just a bank, it's a credit union. It belongs to you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Your money doesn't go overseas, it stays right here. We are joined here in studio, Bob Summerby, old friend and colleague, editor of the Daily Howler, is back in the studio once again.
That's me.
Let's get his. Oh, there you go. You there?
I'm here.
There
we go. Now they're making it easy.
Ann McCarthy is with us, dean of the business school at Hamline University in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and used to have assistant dean at Johns Hopkins School of Business, and joined us here first when she was running for comptroller. And has been coming on a great deal ever since, and we've missed having her on the air. And Ann, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Mark. And by the way, you
yes
have to say I was right.
Ann McCarthy was right because you did what?
I predicted that President Obama would be reelected, a year and a half ago.
Almost
you sure
almost
did.
Years ago.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's that McCarthy name? It makes her very wise.
She's wise.
She is wise.
And Hassan Giordano is with us.
Anthony McCarthy?
That is.
And Hassan writes for the Baltimore Independent Examiner column, writes the Baltimore Independent Examiner column for the Baltimore Examiner. And hosts of the Reporters Roundtable. And it's good to have you in the studio again, Hassan.
It's always a pleasure. And a year and a half out, I'm going to predict that Ann McCarthy will come back and be the comptroller for the state of Maryland in 2014.
All right.
Let's make this happen.
I'd like to say I predicted that the head flip would be heads, the coin toss would be heads last night, and I was right. So
we have a smart bunch of folks,
I don't normally bring that
Mark
up, but
I predicted bupkis.
Me,
which
me
means
too,
nothing. So, and we're open here, 410-319-8888. I really am want to do this. There's so much going on. We talked, before we went on the air, about Gaza and Israel. We talked about the fact that many people are arguing over what this kind of demise of Hostess means, 18,000 workers losing their jobs, and where the blame lies. And we talked about the state of Maryland, where transportation money is not had. Same thing in Virginia, that states are kind of crumbling in many ways and have no means to fix their crumbling and what that means and where you go. Bob came in talking about the incredible school he witnessed in Durham, North Carolina, which was also interesting as well. But there are many things out there, and there was the caucus this weekend.
That's right.
That you helped to put together, Anthony.
And believe it or not, Susan Rice was oftentimes the subject matter at the Legislative Black Caucus. A lot of folks really, I guess, getting ready and bearing down if the president does, in fact, nominate her A lot of people want to fight for her and make sure she gets that job.
Doesn't he almost have to now?
Well, he does have to. But let's go around the room here, and we can discuss each thing that we think is important to put on the table, and just say what you all think. And why don't we start with my wonderful friend and co-host, Anthony McCarthy.
Right now, Mark, not necessarily Susan Rice, but it really—
Susan.
Yeah.
But Anne Rice is the author.
That's right, right. Of the vampire trilogy. Anyway, all right, we need to pull it together. So I have been following over the last couple of days, like a lot of people around the country and around the world, the developments in the Middle East.
Yes.
As Israel and with deadly precision has been firing back, taking out several leaders of Hamas and really beginning to marshal their forces along the border with a real threat to go in to the Gaza and really do some some damage. If we do not pull these folks back, whether we're talking about Hamas, whether we're talking about extremists in the region or Israel, right now, you know, I didn't know as I was watching all this and I was praying about all this and trying to study it, Israel has the 10th largest military in the country.
In the world.
In the world. Thank you, Mark. In the world. For such a little country, amazing firepower. That they are being very clear. I was listening to Prime Minister Netanyahu. It's almost as if, and I'm not casting blame on either side. I'm just saying it is as if he is itching to move this to the next level, and it's frightening because there, you know, what happens to Israel. There are countries, including the United States, who've made it very clear they will stand with Israel and stand up for Israel. But also, Mark, there are forces in that region that are equally clear that they will go to bat for Hamas. So I think we need to watch this. This has huge implications, and not just around the world, but right here in the United States as the president begins another term.
Huge.
Huge implications.
Huge.
That's what I've been thinking.
Anybody else want to chime in on this before we move to another, see what on other people's minds and see what you're thinking about?
I think it's an interesting distraction from the president wanted to come in. He wanted to get this fiscal cliff out of the way, which would be my tidbit, and then hopefully move into immigration reform and other kind of productive things. And this kind of takes the whole focus away from the president, especially if they go into war. I mean, you know, he's been very tepid. He's running around the world right now, making his goodwill tour. And you know, he really doesn't want to delve in. He's basically telling them, look, get your act together. But you can tell that he is not as forceful as past presidents have been in asserting his claim in full support of Israel. And so that's what's interesting to me. I want to see exactly how far the president and the United States will go in supporting Israel and to what degree if it escalates.
Ann?
My issue is the leadership change in China, and mm-hmm. I think it's telling that President Obama is in Myanmar and Cambodia, which are Chinese neighbors, and have recently had fallings out with their relationship with China at the same time that there's a leadership change. So I think it was very astute of the president to go there at this point in time.
And before we go to the other subjects, I just want to—I was telling everybody before we went on the air, we were talking about the Israel-Palestinian issue and the Gazans. And I read something that I wrote to a friend who wrote to me on Facebook— when they put up a map of how the Palestinian land has dwindled down since 1948. And then we're not spending the whole hour in Israel. I thought I'd just share this. Mm-hmm. Then we'll go around the room and see what the other issues are for people before we open the phones. And it's something that's really near and dear to my heart because it's part of my family and where I come from. Mm-hmm. And let me just what I wrote to this person, and I'll just share it with everybody. I said, as much as I believe that Zionism at its core is a liberation movement, or was when we Jews in Europe were an oppressed people, the occupation of Palestine, of the West Bank and Gaza, is not only colonialist and creating Israelis as oppressors, but is destroying the soul of the Jewish people. This makes me sick in heart and soul. In the depths of my gut, my stomach turns. There's a deep anti-Semitism in this world that exists just below the surface of civility. And while not blaming Jews for this, for creating anti-Semitism, this occupation, this oppressive occupation, is fueling the evil pot of anti-Semitism. And what 2,000 years of oppression could not do, this Israeli government might do, which is to destroy the Israeli and Jewish people, and that we have to see peace come to this, to that region. You have to oppose this occupation. You have to oppose the embargo. And you have to do what many Jews want to do in the very beginning, which was to have, they wanted to buy a national state. Now, that may not come to pass, but pretty soon Israel and the Palestinians are going to find themselves in a place where they cannot extricate themselves
from
one another.
Where they will not be able to pull back.
Growing 20%. Soon, say in the next 10 years, 25%. The Israeli population will be Arab, Christian, and Muslim Arabs, mostly Christian, but Christian and Muslim, or mixed. That the West Bank is being occupied, so great swaths of land are settled by Jews. And it's going to be a very difficult – people are not going to be able to tell themselves apart from this. And it's something that has to be dealt with. My fear is that President Barack Obama and the rest of the people involved in this don't have the power nor the forcefulness to kind of take it by hand and force a change, which we could because we control the military budget of Israel as we do Egypt. We have a lot of leverage that we don't want to use. And I think that while most – and if you saw the pictures coming out of Gaza today in the last few days of children being mutilated – it's hard. They're hard to look at. I've looked at them all morning long, and it's also true that these rockets were going out and going to Tel Aviv and going to Jerusalem, and the madness prevails. And it's people have to pull it back.
I think the president wants to do that, but the problem is he has an oppositional party here in America. Look, when I put this on Facebook, it's like, oh my God, you're racist. How could you come out against Israel? And I'm not. It's but when you have the big bad bully of America always on their side, no matter what. Think of the mindset of people like the Palestinians and Hamas who are trying to defend not only their people but their land. You know, what do you expect their mindset to be? I mean, it seems like it's everybody against us. Even when President Bush, like I said, set up democracy over there, Hamas wins. It's like, oh, no. Right. Scratch that. You know, we can't have that. And it's like, why? I mean, you set this up and in place. And I just think that if people kind of backed off and let the president be the president – and assert some type of leadership in this, we may have some type of peaceful conflict or resolution. But I just don't think that the outside parties allow that.
So Bob, let me get you in here. What is on top of your list here?
People are not likely to let the president be the president. That's just right. Not the way it works. And that's really pretty much what I've been writing about at the Daily Howler. I mean, I haven't seen you since the election, and I think it was a fascinating – I think the outcome of this election – given that it wasn't a blowout or a landslide, given that it was a relatively closely contested election in the final votes, which are still being counted, given that it wasn't a blowout, I think the fallout from this election has been fascinating, with the Republican Party, many people in the Republican Party seeming to take a message that the future does not look great unless changes are made. You know, normally you would think it would take a bigger defeat to produce this much initial rethinking. I think it's been fascinating and encouraging to see this much rethinking. On the other hand, I've been writing almost exclusively now. I wish I wasn't. I've been writing about Susan Rice because here we have – this is a pattern from the Clinton-Gore years, a pattern of just a silly, ginned-up pseudo-scandal. And I have argued in the past when against liberals and progressives ginning up silly pseudo-scandals against Republicans – but this is a silly, ginned-up pseudo-scandal where the mainstream press corps has really bought the narrative from the Republican Party. I have no idea why. Maureen Dowd yesterday in the Washington and the New York Times, Bob Schieffer yesterday on Face the Nation, Just an embarrassment. Playing a caddy to John McCain on Face the Nation yesterday, they just can't quit John McCain. He is now the craziest person in Washington. The mainstream press corps sold their soul to his greatness 20 years ago. They can't quit him. They have to repeat his ridiculous claims. And this pseudo-scandal about Susan Rice is so ridiculous. And it really – I haven't seen the mainstream press corps buy a narrative from the Republican Party this way in years. This is a throwback to an older era, and it's just poisoning our discussion in this country. It's no one's going to let the president be the president because that's just not the way it works. And I think it's very troubling and shocking to me to see the way mainstream journalists, if you just go back and look at the transcripts, it's not hard to go back and look at the transcripts of what she actually said on those Sunday shows back in September, 5 days after the the killings in Benghazi. It's not hard to go back and see what she said, unless you're a journalist, in which case it's apparently impossible to go back and see what she said. It's impossible to play tape that isn't cherry-picked to give a false impression. And so a completely bogus impression, it was ginned up. It was all over the Sunday shows yesterday. So my view is here we go again. And the liberal world tonight, I'll tell you, on MSNBC, you won't hear a word about Maureen Dowd. You won't hear a word about Bob Schieffer. We liberals, our liberal leaders, our handpicked liberal leaders, have sat for 20 years and tolerated this because these are powerful players in the mainstream press corps where the good jobs come from and where the social contacts are. They will never say a word about Maureen Dowd with her endless misogyny against Democratic-only women. She has never gone after a Republican. She has this crazy thing about Democratic women. She's been crazy for years. They won't criticize her. They won't criticize Bob Schieffer. These are the power players in the mainstream press, and they will never say a word about it. They let them tear Clinton and Gore apart, and they're doing the same thing right now in this case. It's just insane.
Ann McCarthy, what are your thoughts on this?
Maureen Dowd wasn't a big George W. supporter either.
No, but she has a level of weird misogyny toward Democratic women that she doesn't have. I'm not saying she should. She shouldn't have it toward Republican women. But she's had it forever. I mean, her worst columns are about Howard Dean's wife, whose mousy clothes were upsetting to her. She just has a level. Let's be frank. She is very angry at Democratic women and the Democratic male politicians who have married them. She doesn't have this reaction to Republican women. Good. She shouldn't. But this is right back to it yesterday in that column with her ginning up her cat fights between Samantha Power and I mean, just my God, this will never end with her. So I say good that she doesn't do this to Republican women. She shouldn't do it to Republican women, but she does do it to Democratic women.
You know what? I applaud, first and foremost, the incoming chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, Congresswoman Fudge. They actually stood up for Susan Rice in a press conference. And it was multiracial, but she basically said, look, this is the Republicans being led by Fox News. And like you said, Bob, it's being now because they have kind of painted the mainstream into the corner. Oh, my God, you never talked about Benghazi. You never talked and made them, force them into talking about Benghazi. Then they flipped the script and said, oh, it's all Susan Rice's fault. She's incapable of being a top official. She needs to go. And, you know, Lindsey Graham, I used to think at some point he was very – somewhat mainstream. He was a little bit more independent. He seemed to be able to work with both sides of the aisle. And he has sounded just like McCain, like an idiot. I mean, a pure D idiot. And he's basically saying, over my dead body, will she ever be appointed to anything? And then when you go back to Condoleezza Rice 8 years ago, it's like they don't want to have that conversation. And I think it's just really amazing. And then the Republicans wonder why they have a racial problem in their party, and they're so disconnected with Americans, because when they do things like this, you can have a Michael Steele all you want. He can go and talk all he wants with all the talking points. These type of issues, like Bob said, has really just makes their party look very bad.
And
I agree. I don't think the Republicans learned anything from this election.
Well,
you know,
I will say
the governors got together and basically said we need to double down and be conservative. It wasn't the message. It wasn't our ideology. It was the person.
Right.
That was not the lesson to draw from, you know, November 6th.
Well, I see different people saying different things, and some people have said things. I think there is a little bit of churn going on. And I will say that McCain and Graham both kind of backed off yesterday on the Sunday shows from their insistence that over their dead body would Susan Rice ever be appointed to anything. So they both seem to slide backwards a little bit. But I'm a little more hopeful that some Republicans are rethinking because we need two good parties, or maybe even three, but we need at least two.
And the good thing that I saw happening over the weekend when it came to Susan Rice, and I'm with Bob, it's fascinating to me to watch how the media takes the narrative and adds to it. And continues to, I mean, John McCain was frothing at the mouth early last week about Susan Rice, demanding this and that. And now as you watch him, I guess the problem I see is he's gotten the press so ginned up it is now a legitimate story in their eyes. Lindsey Graham trying to walk it back. John McCain trying to walk it back, saying now all he needs for her to do is to admit she was wrong. Just say that you were wrong, and he will take, you know, then he will end his opposition to a possible appointment at the State Department. So I think that John McCain, someone slapped him in the face and said, get a hold of yourself. Because he really was pushing a narrative that even John Lieberman, who was, they call themselves the Three Amigos.
Joe Lieberman.
Joe Lieberman said, I can't be a part of this.
Right.
This is madness.
Well, McCain, he backed off on the Over My Dead Body pledge yesterday, but he was still making these ridiculous, not just about Susan Rice, but ridiculous presentations about what Obama said at the UN.
That's right.
He did not say anything at the UN, the stuff that he's talking about. I mean, McCain is just off in the weeds, and people like Bob Schieffer. Bob Schieffer is one of the people who interviewed Susan Rice on September 16th. He can't describe what she said to him. I mean, he simply has to repeat what McCain said.
I think what's happening in Gaza and Israel is going to make Susan Rice old news.
I think you're right.
And if the Democrats and if the president doesn't get out in front of, you know, what's happening in Israel and Gaza, then the Republicans are going to try to claim it as they're the experts on foreign policy. That's all they're trying to do right now. They're trying to say they're better. They lost the foreign policy sort of high road that they used to have, and they're trying to get it back. First it was Susan Rice. First it was, you know, what happened in Benghazi. Next it should be, if they were smart, to get out in front of this Israel-Palestinian thing. But right now, it's a little bit of a vacuum today.
But how are they getting out in front of a Benghazi? This is what kills me, and I think most Americans are looking at this. It's like they're blaming Susan Rice and Obama for killing these four Americans. You never once take aim at the terrorist who killed these people. You've never heard them say, you know what, let's focus our attention on getting the culprits and bringing justice to these four Americans in the lives of these people. They never mention them. It's always Susan Rice, President Obama, they were wrong, they did this wrong. Well, what about the incident in and of itself? To me, that's not strong on national security.
See, you know what surprises me is that they haven't gone after Petraeus, because he was the head of the CIA when this happened. Where was our CIA intelligence telling us that this was going to happen?
And the other interesting thing about what Ann just shared with us, Petraeus went to the Hill. Did he go to the Hill, or they did it somewhere else?
No, was he
it
went on to the Hill.
Went to the Hill, testified. Democrats and Republicans from the intelligence committees came out, and they had completely different perceptions of what he shared with them. I mean, you would have thought they were in different places. To listen to Dianne Feinstein, to listen to Lindsey Graham, and these folks, you would have never believed they were in the same room. So I think they are, both the Democrats and the Republicans. Obviously, Democrats are in, we're going to protect our president, we're going to support our president. Republicans are like, we're going to take aim at anything we can. But I was amazed at how different they reported what Petraeus and others shared with them in those hearings.
So let me get your thoughts at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. That's steinershow@gmail.com. Your thoughts on this? We'll raise some other issues as well. Let's get a call in here. And Baba, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening. How's everybody?
Hey, Baba.
Well, welcome.
Let me basically say this concerning Israel. Since I don't suffer from the miseducation of the Negro, the brother that wrote that book, Israel is on the continent of Africa, Northeast Africa. And it was that land was given to them by Dag Hammarskjöld back in that period. Those are Polish people, Russians, and Germans. First of all, this anti-Semitism, you know what, are not Semitic people. Those Europeans from those nations and countries ethnically that I name are not, they are Europeans. They are not Semitic people. And these massacres and tragedy has been going on for the last 60 years. Ariel Sharon bulldozed a Palestinian village and buried those real Muslims alive, buried them alive. Menachem Begin, the likes of him, and Netanyahu should be taken to The Hague and put on charges of war crimes, just like Charles Taylor was, an African. So I don't know. I guess you're going to have a whole lot of people talking about sympathy for Israel. It's like David and Goliath. They are, because they have a few rockets and whatnot to fight back, and the massive military power that they have. And Obama should get into this. They have already denied the Palestinians a state, the U.S., and you guess, you know who, Netanyahu, that criminal, is trying to get Obama to go along with, well, Obama has already come up with the terrorist nation that you call the USA, denying them a basic state. So when I hear this foolishness about basically Israel, which is on the continent, and none of those Europeans, they are occupying that land, Semitic people.
All right, Baba, good to hear from you. We're going to take a quick break. We'll go ahead and take us to break.
Yeah, okay. I think it's important what Baba shared with us. The important part is if we don't know that history, and oftentimes our response to what goes on between Israel and its Arab neighbors, it's oftentimes on talk radio and other places, it's because people refuse to remember the history of how that nation was built and the commitment. And I'm stuck on this, and I know Baba is going to be angry with me. I'm stuck on the historic commitment that we have made to the state of Israel. We can never put that in jeopardy.
Huh?
I agree. You know, we also always talk about this in terms of, I'd say, like the bigger view, but I recently read a book called The Lemon Tree.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Another book.
It's a fabulous book in terms of understanding how this whole, you know, this decades-long conflict has affected real people and how real people have tried to make a difference in the relationship between the Palestinians and the Jews. I mean, it's a fab. It's also kind of a little, you know, depressing. It's like, will we ever get to a solution? But if these people can't, but it's a great book. I'd recommend it.
What's that commitment to Israel do for America? That's what I don't understand. We I don't care what they do. It's go ahead and do whatever you want to do. You can do whatever you want to the rest of the world, and we're going to defend you. That to me is asinine.
I understand that, but I think you have to remember that not all relationships have to be reciprocal. We don't have to get something back for Israel to stand with Israel. The relationship itself is historic. The relationship, just think of all of the Americans that went to that state, who worked so hard for the creation of that state. It is historic and it is religious.
Golda Meir was a teacher from Milwaukee.
In Midwest, that's right.
Well, I mean, I we have to take a break here.
Mark's going to get me. Look at that face.
No, I'm just saying that if we really are concerned about the future of peace in the Middle East and the future of Israel, then we would say to Israel, very simply, get out of the West Bank. Let's end the embargo. Let's force negotiations and put and deal with what we're and address the issues. And that's you can't kind of overlook that, you know. And I think that, to correct one historical fact, over half the Jews who live in Israel proper are from Africa and the Middle East. They're not from Europe, though I'll just point that out. We can take a short break and come back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I'm here with Anthony.
Anthony McCarthy. I'm sorry. We have such great conversations during the break. My mind was really stuck on a lot of the stuff we were saying.
Anthony and I are joined here.
It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here, brother. Anthony and I are joined here by Bob Somerby, editor of the Daily Howler, Hassan Giordano, who writes the Baltimore Independent Examiner column for the Baltimore Examiner, and the host of Reporters Roundtable, Anne McCarthy, dean of the Business School and Hamline University in Minneapolis, Minnesota, ran for control here in the state of Maryland, where we met, and was assistant dean at Johns Hopkins School of Business, Carey School of Business, when she was in the studio a great deal as a guest. 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones. And I think I'm going to pronounce his name right. If it's not, correct me, but it's on my screen. It's B-R-A-R-E. Is it Brary?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Bernard.
Bernard. It says B-R-A-R-E on my screen. I'm sorry. Bernard, go ahead.
Yes, I want to throw something out there. Number one, how come Hillary not mentioned it? She's a secretary. Her name is not, you know, being thrown around with McCain and the senator from South Carolina. Number two, Susan Rice, they say, was said what she said. She was told to say that because it was a operation going on, covert operation going on, and they were living who was involved, and they didn't want to out them. And they were America, CIA, they didn't want to out them. And she was told what to say. And then when Friday, I listened at the MSNBC, some of the other news, and Petraeus said that Susan Rice didn't have anything to do with it. She, her talking points was given to her because they didn't want to out the covert operations that was supposed to be taking place.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's like it's a red. You're so right. It's like a red herring. Susan Rice was just a messenger, you know, giving a message that was approved by the administration. She had nothing to do with any of that.
Well, the president made me proud when he stood up in that press conference and said, don't go after her. You want to bully somebody, you come after me.
Yes.
That's the type of leadership that we do need in Congress and in the White House.
But how about Hillary Clinton? I mean, why hasn't her name been mentioned more? I mean, not that I'm suggesting they should go out, but I mean, she's the Secretary of State.
And she took fault in that Benghazi situation as well.
Well, I mean, Susan Rice became the target because she went on the Sunday shows,
mm-hmm.
and she was the one. This was on September 16th, 5 days after the killings. So she went on the Sunday shows, all five Sunday shows. So she became the central player. You know, it's just so that's how she got in the middle of it. No one is saying that she's the one who created the situation.
Right.
They're saying that, of course, she must have known better. By the way, if you just look at what she said that day, first of all, she gave about 800 caveats. This is the best current information, and the investigation is going on, and I'm just giving you our best current assessment. She said it over and over again. You can't say this to the National Press Corps. They don't understand things like that. It goes right over their head. And if you leave something unclear, or if you say we don't know, they start imagining that you said something else, and they start making up what you must have said when you didn't say it. If you simply look at what she said, she didn't say much. And if you look at the assessment she was given, that assessment didn't say much. You know what? They didn't know a whole lot at
that
point, and they don't know a whole lot right now. And what's so amazing is if you watch people like Schieffer and all over the mainstream press corps, they're acting like all these issues have been resolved, like we know how much pre-planning went in and what the motives were. We don't know how much pre-planning went in into the attack and what the motives were. We don't know that even today. But they've just made up this story, and it all goes back to what she said on September 16th, which wasn't much.
Well, I mean, what we do know in some ways about that is that there's that this disruption of the stability of dictators, and I mean that's a positive thing, it's just the disruption of the stability of dictators throughout the Middle East, whether it's Saddam Hussein or Idris Mubarak or in Tunisia or Morocco or Libya, wherever that may be, has and this like happened with in Yugoslavia when Tito was no longer died, was that it's unleashed forces that were bubbling under the ground, mm-hmm. and they destroyed the secular opposition to most of those Arab regimes, the communists, the liberals, the progressives, that movement was destroyed in large part, and the vacuum was filled by the groups like the Muslim Brotherhoods. And further to the extreme, the Salafis, and they have with guns, and so that's the real issue. And so we unleash this stuff, thinking we can control things.
That's right.
You know, and oh, there's oil in Iraq, and all the Italian and French oil that they need from Libya, and they can't control those forces, and that's part of what's erupting. They can't figure out how to put the lid on this thing at all. They didn't take the lid off. Well, actually, in some ways, America did help take the lid off by invading Iraq. I think that was one of the beginnings of taking this lid off.
When Secretary Rice, Colin Powell, everybody else in the administration, including the president, said, oh, there's weapons of mass destruction. I guarantee it. But nobody's saying anything about that in the GOP. That's what baffles me.
So let me go to the back of the phones here for a moment, 410-319-8888, and get some other thoughts in here. And let's go to who hasn't been on in a while. Most everybody here has been on a while, so let me just pick one. And let's go to Clarence, who's on the air.
Hey, good afternoon.
Thank you.
You know what's really amazing about this is the whole time that Mubarak was in power in Egypt, the Palestinians only had these type of weapons that were, you know, of the homemade variety that didn't have very much range on them. But ever since the Arab Spring has come about, now all of a sudden the Palestinians have come up with these weapons that are much more sophisticated and almost capable of reaching Tel Aviv. Now, in that sense, I'm almost getting the impression that, you know, that's kind of like an instigator. Maybe somebody's trying to force an issue here, much like the thing with Palestine and Afghanistan, you know, forces being able to come through and attack Americans and things like that. You know, it's uncanny that this has happened. I'm neutral in this because I believe that it goes deeper than that. I believe both sides have just lost the ability to look at each other as human beings. So
I think that part is true.
Yeah. How do you see that as an instigating move, like this regime that's in power now is really trying to instigate this?
Which one you mean, in Israel?
No, the forces that are allowing these weapons to be shipped through the desert and into to the West Bank to be used against Israel.
My analysis is that there are, and it'll be a lot of my friends will be very upset with this, I'm going to say it anyway, that the madmen are controlling both sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. That Hamas and the fundamentalists, look, there's a group in Gaza that we've been in touch with, had in the air, of young Gazans who were fighting the occupation of Israel and the embargo. They're also trying to fight Hamas because they want freedom to be, to not have to wear headscarves, and freedom to live the life they want to live and to have a real democracy. And that's not being allowed. And I think the right-wingers who've taken over Israel, I'm sorry, are just as bad. Mm-hmm. That they are dangerous. They're dangerous to world peace, and they're dangerous. It's insane. And I think that it's a very frightening situation that you've gotten to. I mean, if the West had, if when Hamas won the election, if the West had just recognized Hamas, even though that's in their charter, they said to destroy Israel, you can negotiate that away. Mm-hmm. If they had recognized Hamas and begun negotiations and allowed the Palestinian state to be built up economically, the things would be very different. If you could build a port in Gaza,
that's right,
an airport in Gaza, and sure, you want to have international forces patrolling the port, patrolling the airport to make sure nothing's smuggled in, fine. Make that part of the negotiations. But give people, you know what they call in Africa? They call the Lebanese and the Palestinians the Jews of Africa because they're in business in a lot of places all throughout Africa. It's an entrepreneurial culture. And so it's but we have, I think, the madmen are running the show.
And as Hassan said, I think that we missed opportunities to do just as you said, Mark. There were opportunities for the West to lead and to build bridges, literally and figuratively, with Hamas. But because we didn't, I mean, you see the influence that the extremists have. No matter how you dress up the Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood, in my heart, I know that there is an agenda behind all of that that has to be kept in check. And I'm not saying that to defend Israel, because I think Israel has their own set of problems. But I think we did. The West missed opportunities to build
Women in Egypt today are fighting the government that was elected because there are people in the parliament of Egypt, not saying it'll go through, but this is one of the fights they're having, to once again allow female circumcision, genital mutilation. I mean, that's actually debating that whether to not allow that back. I mean, that's the insanity, that you know. And so it's like the some kind of mad virus has been unleashed.
And Mark, you and I have a dear friend that just came from Egypt, and he was telling me, they almost believe that we have really ridiculous short attention spans, that we need to be entertained and distracted even around issues of war and revolution. Because they asked this person, why aren't you all still reporting on what's happening here?
So let me go back to the phones and get some other listeners in here. And also, my producer just sent me a note. Are you going to talk about Hostess and the Twinkies? And you can bring that up as well, because I think this is an example where people are bad-mouthing the unions as causing this. And I wrote on somebody's page, Facebook page over the weekend, I don't blame the Democrats. I don't blame the Republicans. I do blame the owners of this company and the Wall Street vultures who see companies they can take apart and 18,000 Americans lose their jobs. These people have already gone down from $25 an hour to $12 an hour to $15 an hour and being pushed down even further. I mean, I like to see President Barack Obama stand up for them. When he ran for president, he said, if unions are fighting for their jobs and decent wages, I'm going to put on my soft shoes and walk with them. Well, he's not walking yet.
That was the first term.
That was the issue that I was going to bring up. We got too far into this. Is what is that misconception that I'm writing about now of the middle class, especially in African American society? And we talked about this at the Black Caucus this weekend. And what does this mystical fiscal cliff mean? And what does this war mean to our faltering economy if we have to go in guns a-blazing to help Israel? So a lot of all of this kind of comes together, and I think it's a conversation that really needs to, but a lot of people don't understand what the middle class is, and the president hasn't done a good job of explaining what the fiscal cliff means if we go beyond that.
And it will. And open the phones. Let me just read this, and we'll go right to the phones here. This is interesting. This is something that John Nichols wrote about the hostess thing. I'll just read it. He said, the union did not create the crisis that led to the company's incompetent managers to announce plans to shutter it. And they were incompetent because they never caught up with the marketing of the present. The union workers did not ask for more pay. The union workers did not ask for more benefits. The union workers did not ask for more better pensions. The union and its members had a long history of working with the company to try to make it viable. They had made wage and benefit concessions to keep the company viable. They adjusted to new technologies, new demands. They took deep layoffs, 20% of the force, and kept showing up for work even as the plants were closed. They kept working even as the company stopped making payment to their pension fund more than a year ago. The workers did not squeeze the filling out of the hostess. Hostess was smashed by vulture capitalists, a management team that, in the words of economist Dean Baker, shows little confidence and is rapidly stuffing its pockets at the company's expense. That's the reality, in my perspective. 410-319-8888, what's your reality? You're glad to join in here. You're my guest as well. Maybe you don't agree with that. I'd love to hear about it. Let's go to Michelle in Baltimore. You're on the air. Is Michelle on the air? Am I plugged in? I am plugged in. Michelle? All right. Let's try. No, Michelle? Okay. We'll see what happens. Chris, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Good evening, everybody.
And Chris, let me tell you something. You called last week, right?
Yes.
And you called during the show about the minstrelsy, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes. Let me just tell you that I agreed with some of your criticism of that show, and that I meant to say it to you while you were on the air, and that the conversation did not go where I thought it was going to go. I thought it was a powerful subject, but we didn't get to the points we needed to get to. So we'll do that again with a larger panel. So I just want to say I understood your criticism. I'll go ahead with today.
Well, thank you. I called before. You had a couple of guests on that were, I believe, described as a Palestinian scholar, and I may be wrong.
Last week, Dr. Ali Zagheb, former professor at Birzeit University, now a businessman. Yeah.
And the question I presented to them at that time, I'm going to present again because I think my question is, and I'm not anti-Israeli or pro-Palestinian, it's to get an answer because I don't know. But why is the U.S. such a staunch ally of Israel? And the reason I ask is because I've always kind of had an eye on international politics. And every relationship built in international politics is built on a quid pro quo. What can you do for me, and here's what I can do for you. It's usually whether it's resources, whether it's geographical, tactical positioning. There has to be something coming the other way. And my question was, why? I mean, with such allies, people running for office at the national level, be it senator, president, the first thing they say is, and we will be a friend to Israel. And again, I'm not anti-Israel at all. I'm wondering why that is. What is the quid pro quo?
See, I just said that earlier. And most Americans, if you ask them, they won't know. And they question, why do we have this loving relationship that we just can't seem to let go? That's a good question.
We were talking about during the break.
Well, they were the first democracy until recently in the Middle East. They were the first and only democracy in the Middle East. And as a supporter of democracy throughout the world, we were a staunch ally of Israel. That is one reason from a historical point of view.
But they're not the only democracy anymore. And we've set up a lot of democracy that are now very friendly to America. So why is it, like the brother just said, when you run for office, it's, I'm pro-Israel to get elected and make sure you stay elected. why being pro-Israel makes you electable in America, which is nowhere near Israel, it just baffles not only me, but I guarantee a good majority
of
Americans.
Isn't it in part because there's a very strong tie between the Jewish community in America and Israel, and the Jewish community in America is very politically active and very active in fundraising? I mean, you know, it's a relatively small vote, but it's a significant vote.
Right.
And it's a very active community in terms of fundraising. That's, I mean, all our domestic politics turns on matters like this. Not just this. Every issue in American politics which involves elected officials turns on voting in this country and fundraising in this country. And there are all the arguments about history, et cetera, and those arguments may be valid or not, depending on one's perspective. But there's no question that when there is an active Palestinian community in this country which is engaged in fundraising and donation and voting, there's going to be candidates responding to that. That is growing in this country. But the Jewish – and Irish people in this country, Irish Americans are interested in Irish events in Ireland, the Brits and the Irish. This is a part of all kinds of communities in this country, but I would assume that's a big –
And there's a growing population of young Jews in America who are very disenchanted with Israel and what's happening. And I think part of it, though, is also even older than that. I mean, I think this is a formulation from the 1940s that, remember, America didn't want to let Jews into this country, forced the immigration to Israel, actually, in many ways. And as a Western beachhead in the Middle East, there's no question about that in my mind, that was part of it. And to create what they thought was stability, we had Turkey, we had Israel, and then we're going to have and then later Egypt, after Nasser died, and they could create an Egypt that was more friendly to the West.
And I would challenge, Mark, the idea that a majority of Americans question the relationship that we have with Israel. I would say, I believe a majority of Americans support our relationship with Israel.
I don't.
I think
the majority do. There's no question about that.
I do.
And if they do, they don't know why. A lot of people
feed in
because of the mass media.
No, I think people do because and then we're going to go back to the phone too. I promise to do that. They do because they see it as a Western world, so they support it. Americans do.
They see it as a Western world in the middle of what they see as the Middle East as a Muslim stronghold.
Exactly. And see, that's the basis of this. There is a war on Islam. There's no war on Judaism. There's no war on Christianity. In America, this war on terrorism is based off of Islam. Bottom line, that's why they don't like Hamas, Egypt, and every other country that seems Islamic. That's why there's no Muslims elected in the state of Maryland and very few that are elected to the United States Congress. If we want to be real about it, let's be real about it. Most people who aren't Muslim in this country have a negative view of Islam, and that comes from the mass media.
But, Hassan, I think if we look at the so-called Arab Spring and we look at the changes that have been taking place in the Arab world, I think a lot of people would say we don't have a war on Islam. We have a war on extremist.
How many Muslims is elected in the state?
How many have
ran?
We might have a war on Arab Islam.
Yeah.
We don't have a war with Indonesia, which is the largest country in the world, or Malaysia, or many of the other sort of Far East Muslim-based countries.
We have it right here in America. Be Muslim in America and see what you get from Americans that are not Muslim. It's a very different reality.
That's different, though. I don't disagree with what you just said there. Let me go back to the phones, I promise. 410-319-8888. Dave and Randallstown, you're on the air. Dave, you're on the air. All right. Are we having problems with the phones again? Let's try line four. See if we can get that on the air. Michelle, you're on the air.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
Welcome.
I just want to make a couple of statements, and I want to say that I've found that I agree with a lot of what's being said, and just trying to put it into a simpler term for me as a layman.
Okay.
Number one, going back to the hostess thing, man. And you all keep an open mind about this, but I think the new plantation is corporate America. And I think we're all enslaved by it. So that's number one.
I'm not going to disagree with that.
And then the other thing is the Israeli and Gaza and all that. Again, and it's history for us. People just get drunk with power, and then they get drunk with money, and nobody seems to be dealing with that. It has nothing to do to me about people and human beings and their beliefs. It all has to do with economics and power, and you get crazy people in power, and I don't understand what's going on in Gaza in terms of the people that are pushing this, because they have been slaughtered and maimed, and they're doing the same thing to the Palestinians. For what? For a piece of land that was not even originally theirs. Leave them folks alone. Draw that line. Stay on your side. You stay on your side. And let's learn how to live together. But it doesn't work like that. That's it.
Thank you so much for your call.
East Coast, West Coast.
So in addition to The Lemon Tree, I would also recommend another book, since I'm the academic on the panel. It's called America in the Middle East, 1776 to the Present. And it really talks about how this our history in the Middle East predates even Israel, and how we've been involved in there from the time our country was founded. And many of us, you know, back to the issue that many of you said earlier, if we don't know our history, we can't really understand the issues that are involved and how to solve them.
Should we get any comments?
The thing that I think has to happen, though, Mark, is, and I know we can't lay everything at this president's feet, but the president of the United States has to marshal the allies to Israel to not only be in defense mode of Israel, but also be focused on what must we do to bring peace to that region. What must we do to actually build a bridge that will bring Israel, Hamas, and those other countries, Syria? I mean, really, Mark, I'm so paranoid about it, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but those weapons are being put in the hands of Hamas by staunch enemies of Israel. And really, the truth is, they're enemies of the United States as well. And so we have to be we have to rally to the side, whatever it takes. We have to come to the aid of Israel, because there is this I can't find the right words to put it, but there is this need for it's. We're not just fighting for Gaza. We're really, Israel is fighting every nation around them, with the exception of Jordan and others who began to build these historic alliances and relationships with Israel.
So what happens when the president doesn't step in? What if he just says, you know what, Israel, you're on your own. You want to go attack them people? Let them have. Well, the only reason it won't happen, because the GOP will have a fit, say, and Donald Trump say, see, I told you he was a Muslim. He's not from this country. That's the only reason. But what if it did? What if he just said, you know what, you want to go to attack these people?
Go handle your business.
And that's the only reason they're being bullies, because they know they got the biggest bully behind them ready to attack at any given moment.
Hassan, who's one of my favorite people in all the world, but I reject the idea that Israel is being a bully, when in fact, yes, only three people have died so far, but rockets have rained in Israel.
In Israel, exactly.
In Israel. But rockets are raining down on that country. And we have to understand that they are now experts, because of the history of their country, at protecting themselves.
Anthony.
Million people have to find shelter when those bombs come down.
Where does the mayor redeploy her resources? In a place like East Baltimore with 100 homicides?
Wipe Israel off the face of the map.
Or Roland Park with one.
Let me remember you that
my enemies for over
we have to we have to take a break here. It reminds me out here that what you all are saying is true, but there are hundreds of Palestinians dead, crushed beneath buildings in this conflict in Gaza right now, and a lot of them are children.
Yes, President Obama needs to bring moral persuasion on Netanyahu to do the right thing here.
We have to take a break. My producer is throwing things at the glass. And Ann McCarthy, Dean of the Business School at Hamline University. Great to have you back with us. You'll come again soon, I hope.
I certainly
take
hope.
Take care,
so
Ann.
Bob Summerby, Edward Daly Haller. Check out his website. The man really is
a
clear, cogent thinker and writer. You want to see what he has to say. And we'll hook to that website, Daly Haller. He hates to be lauded, but he had to do it anyway.
He does
and
hate
Hassan Giordano. Thank you, brother, for being in the studio, and thank you for being stepping up to the plate all the time with your thoughts
He's
and
excellent.
Ideas.
Not a problem. Bob Summerbee is going to be the next AG, and Ann's going to be the comptroller 24th.
He's setting it up.
I'm running both the campaigns.
No,
let's get it
that.
Going.
He agrees on philosophy. I don't
and
think he
Steiner
wants
for governor,
AG.
2014.
Of Gaza, I think.
We're going to take a break. Now, folks, get your recipes ready. Chefs are in the house. We're talking turkey or
something.
Faux turkey or something.
Ugh. Ugh.